B-O-O.
It's time once again for KBOO's annual John Lennon birthday celebration, this year with two events. Join KBOO at the Clinton Street Theater this Thursday, October 9th, for the film The U.S. vs. John Lennon. This 2006 documentary is not a movie about the past, but a timely film about artists and their responsibility during a time of war, with the example of John and Yoko turning the spotlight of their celebrity onto what they called commercials for world peace, featuring Gore Vidal, Tariq Ali, Howard Zinn, Yoko Ono, and others. That's this Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. The next night, join us for our all-night birthday party beginning at 8 p.m. until 6 a.m. KBOO presents John Lennon Night with outtakes, interviews, and lots of rare recordings. That's John Lennon Birthday Celebration this week on KBOO Portland.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, and accessories with a focus on natural fibers since 1984. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at GazelleNaturalFiberClothing.com.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Community College, where the Southeast Center at 82nd and Division is now a full-fledged campus, allowing students to earn an associate's degree in their own neighborhood. PCC celebrates on October 18th at noon with campus tours, local food vendors, and live Afro-Cuban music by Maleo de Cuba. pcc.edu/celebrate.
This is called Talking John Birch, Paranoid Blues. I was feeling kind of low down and blue. I didn't know what I was gonna do. The communists was coming around. They was in the air, they was on the ground. They was following me all over. I run down most hurriedly and joined the John Birch Society. Got me a secret membership card, started walking off down the road. Yee-hoo! I'm a real John Bircher now.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. My name is Paul Roland, and that was, of course, Bob Dylan. From Bob Dylan in concert at Brandeis University in 1963, just before, well, right around the time period we'll be talking about with this book called Subversives, the FBI's War on Student Radicals and Reagan's Rise to Power. And we have the author, Seth Rosenfeld, on the phone with us. Are you there, Seth?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. And you're in the San Francisco Bay Area.
I am in the San Francisco area, Haight-Ashbury area.
Aha! Going back to the heart of the counterculture in the 60s area. So you're a longtime resident of that area. You used to work for a couple newspapers there as an investigative reporter. That's true, right?
Yes, I worked for the San Francisco Examiner and then the San Francisco Chronicle for almost 25 years, covering legal affairs and doing investigative reporting.
And a little later, I'd like to talk to you about this concept of investigative reporting and where it's at now, according to most reports, in a fairly dismal state. But we can talk about that later. But I'd like to, in this first part of the program, before we go to our first membership break, let's talk about, just give us kind of an overview of this book. It's a big subject. It's a fairly long time period. There's a lot of history involved. It's very detailed. And so just give us your overview of what this book is about for people who may not be familiar with it.
Well, Subversives is a nonfiction book. It's a history, or if you will, a secret history of the 60s, which is to say it's the history behind the history that we know. It's based mainly on thousands of pages of FBI files that were released to me only after a very lengthy court fight under the Freedom of Information Act. And the three main characters in Subversives are Mario Savio, the leader of the free speech movement, or I should say a leader of the free speech movement, at 1964 at Berkeley, one of the first major protests of the 60s. Clark Kerr, who was the president of the University of California system, and a liberal Democrat and very influential educator. And the third main character is Ronald Reagan, who at this point is a rising conservative star running for his first elected office, the governorship of California in 1966. And what Subversive does is it traces the FBI's secret involvement with each of these very influential figures and looks at how the FBI used and misused its powers to hurt Savio and Clark Kerr and to help Ronald Reagan advance his political career.
And of course, a fourth major figure, and of course there's many others in the book too, it has, that's one thing I really love about the book, is it really gets into really great detail about a lot of the personalities involved in these, really like kind of what formed them and how their kind of their personal lives intersected with their politics. Anyway, obviously J. Edgar Hoover was a fundamental part of this.
Yes. He is actually the fourth main character. He's the face of, or the major face of the FBI. It's a nonfiction book, and it's based on extensive research. There are very detailed notes in the back, but I wrote it in a narrative form, a novelistic form, that would make it be fun to read and driven by the characters and their personalities. And they're fascinating characters. They had a huge amount of influence. And, of course, the FBI's role behind the scenes affected not only what happened at the University of California in Berkeley, but also in California politics and beyond that in national politics and our national culture.
And of course, the last part of the subtitle, Reagan's Rise to Power, obviously the whole ending of the 60s and 70s movement and the counter-reaction with the neoconservative, so-called neoconservative reaction. Reagan was obviously a fundamental part of that, and the whole trajectory of his career really kind of coincided with, you know, with what emerged as what we've all lived with since then, basically.
Yes. Well, the FBI had a secret relationship with Ronald Reagan that goes back to his days in Hollywood in the 40s. And we knew a little bit about that before. During the 1980s, when Reagan was president, a few FBI documents were released that showed that he had been an informer in Hollywood. But at that time, both Reagan and the FBI said that his role was very minimal. As a result of one of my Freedom of Information Act lawsuits, the FBI released more than 10,000 pages concerning Reagan. And these documents show that he was much more active as an informer in Hollywood in the 1940s and 50s, and that he sometimes named fellow actors and actresses on the scantiest of evidence. While he was president of the Screen Actors Guild, the FBI had wide access to guild records and personal information on dozens of actors and actresses without their knowledge. And in return for Reagan's secret help in Hollywood, J. Edgar Hoover later did personal and political favors for Ronald Reagan.
Well, we're going to have to break in a second here. When we come back, I would like to follow up a little more on that. I think there's a book called Dark Victory or something like that. We can talk about that, which focused on the kind of the underside of Reagan's rise to power. And I'd like to also talk about the 50th anniversary of the free speech movement, which is basically this week. But this is Membership Drive Time here at KBOO, and We've got Delphine with us.
Hello, Paul.
Hi, Delphine.
Paul, thank you so much for the programming that you bring us on Wednesday morning. And I know that so many of you out there, listeners, are enjoying it as much as we are here in the studios of KBOO. Give us a call and show us, tell us why you care. The number to call is 877-500-5266. And you could also decide maybe you would like to donate online at kboo.fm. Go there, click on the donate button. Maybe you want to stop by on your way to work. We are located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Maybe that's a more convenient way for you to donate by walking into the station, meeting us, meeting Paul, meeting the people who make it happen behind the scene, behind the microphones. And, you know, this morning we are asking you to donate whatever you can in order to support this hub for information. And we are listening to a conversation that Paul Rowland is having with Seth Rosenfeld, who is in the Haight-Ashbury right now, speaking to us from there about his most recent book called Subversives, the FBF's War on Student Radicals and Reagan's Rise to Power. And if you make a $60 minimum pledge, this book is yours, right? So call in right now with your $60 donation, and you will get this book mailed to you, and you could read it so that you can get all of the details that maybe this conversation this morning will not allow for. So the number to call is 877-500-5266, or donate online at kboo.fm. And maybe, you know, you already have the book, or maybe you would like a different gift this morning. And I have been telling you for the past hour about the pair of tickets that you could get to see Yasin Bey, a.k.a. Mos Def, if you donate $60 or more this morning. And you might remember Yasin Bey, Mos Def, making a video reenacting the force feeding of the inmates of Guantanamo Bay. Very heart-wrenching video to watch, and he did it so that we could get a better understanding as to what's happening. Since then, he hasn't been allowed in his own country of the United States. He is back in, and he is here in Portland, and he will be here on the 10th at 8:30 at the Roseland Theater. And if you call right now with your $60 donation, you could get a pair of tickets, or you could also get the book Subversives, as we have Seth Rosenfeld talking with Paul on the phone right now. Pick up, get a pen and paper, and this is the number to call, 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm.
And we're back. Thank you, Delphine, and thank of all you to all of you who have called already, and to those of you who are about to call or who will call in the next hour or day or two to help us fulfill our membership goals for this 10-day membership drive here at KBOO. And we do have Seth Rosenfeld, I'm sorry, on the line. And we were talking about his book, Subversives. And we're kind of, he was giving us a basic sketch of what the book covers. And yeah, the reason for this program specifically, I wanted to have you on last year when the paperback edition came out, and that we were never able to quite get together on that. But the reason for this program this morning is because this is the 50th anniversary. Boy, time flies, I guess, huh?
Yes, it's the 50th anniversary of the free speech movement, which began October 1st, 1964, and was one of the first major protests of the 1960s. In many ways, the beginning of the student protest movement of the 60s. And the background to the free speech movement really begins with the civil rights movement. A number of students at Berkeley, including Mario Savio, had gone south to Mississippi during the summer of 1964 to help register people to vote in the face of oppression and many obstacles. And while in the South, they risked their lives. Savio, for example, was attacked and beaten by Ku Klux Klan members in broad daylight in Jackson, Mississippi. There were bomb threats against them. And they not only risked their lives, but they were urging black residents of Mississippi to risk their lives and to vote. And Savio and others returned to Berkeley that fall of 1964 to go back to school, and were surprised to find that the university administration had begun enforcing a ban, a decades-old ban, on political activity on campus. This rule dated to the 1930s, and it prohibited students from handing out, for example, a leaflet for civil rights or a leaflet for Senator Barry Goldwater, who was the Republican candidate for president that year. And the students were very disturbed by this. They saw it not only as an attack on their rights, their constitutional rights, but as an attack on the civil rights movement itself. They tried to negotiate with the university administration to no avail. So on the morning of October 1st, 1964, they defiantly set up a card table on the main plaza right in front of Sproul Hall, the main administration building, and began to hand out leaflets for the civil rights movement. No sooner had they done that than a campus police car rolled right into the middle of the plaza, and police officers arrested a man behind the table and loaded him into the back of the car. But before they could drive off, students began to sit down around the police car, and soon the plaza was filled with hundreds of students sitting down around the police car chanting, "Let him go, let him go."
Yeah, there's video footage of that, which is really amazing. You know, now we've got YouTube. People can, you know, look up. It's really worth it to, you know, put in Mario Savio and hear his amazing speeches or see the footage of that time. It was really an amazing direct action. I've been involved in a fair number of direct actions. That was especially the time that it occurred in. It was pretty unprecedented, right?
It was shocking. People were not used to this kind of thing at all. Of course, now we've had so many protests in the following decades. This would seem relatively mild, but at the time it was absolutely shocking to people who were more accustomed to the campus complacency of the 1950s. Well, for the next 32 hours, the students held the police car captive and released the car only after the university administration agreed to discuss the ban and try to resolve the problem. It was a nonviolent protest, and it was the beginning of the free speech movement, which for the next 3 months staged a series of increasingly larger protests, including the biggest sit-in to date in the state of California, at which more than 800 people were arrested. And ultimately, the university administration was forced to agree that this rule was a violation of the U.S. Constitution, and it was rescinded. So as a result of that, students at Berkeley won the right to engage in First Amendment activities on the campus, which of course is public property. And this had tremendous influence. It inspired students at campuses around the country to become more politically active, and it led to the anti-war movement as well. It opened the campus to some of the first and biggest anti-war teach-ins of the 60s. But it also had another reaction. It outraged conservatives such as Ronald Reagan, who was beginning to run for governor, and made this one of his major issues, what he called the mess at Berkeley. And it had a secret impact as well, which is J. Edgar Hoover's FBI mounted an enormous investigation, not only into the students, but their parents, their professors, also university administrators, and even members of the Board of Regents. And beyond just gathering this information, J. Edgar Hoover's FBI used it in an attempt to stifle the free speech movement and subsequent protests.
Seth, we're going to have to break again. That's a good point to do that. And we're going to pick up this history and this account of Subversives, the FBI's War on Student Radicals and Reagan's Rise to Power, the author Seth Rosenfeld. My guest this morning here on Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO, and we're in our membership drive, and the number to call is 877-500-5266 to support this and other programming. And just before we go to Delphine, this is Talk Radio, so when we come back in a few minutes, we will be inviting callers, and I'll give you the number right away when we get back. So, Delphine, take it away.
Yes. This is a different number that I am asking you to call right now. And that number is 877-500-5266. And that's the number you want to call to make your donation to KBOO. And this is the way that we are asking you to show your love, show your support, show that the kind of programming we are bringing to you matters, is meaningful, and has an impact on you personally. And when you call and make your donation, right after you say how much you like to donate, then you can also say why you love KBOO. Why do you want to support KBOO? And I want to take this time to thank Joan from Salem, who is a renewing member, and she called this morning and said, I want to pledge my support. I have been donating. I want to continue to donate on a monthly basis. The number to call is 877-500-5266. We have volunteers here ready to pick up your call, ready to listen to you, tell them how much you would like to donate, how you would like to donate. Would you like to donate in full this morning and give KBOO this lump of money that you have? Or would you like to sparse this out and give a smaller amount every month, right? By giving little by little every month, maybe 1 hour of your wage, you know, each month. This is the best way that we can provide a stable funding for KBOO. And, you know, this is the way I donate personally, a small amount being taken out of my account every month. It's painless. I don't feel it. But at the same time, I get all the benefits of it by listening and tuning into KBOO. Usually I'm at home listening to this program or in my car driving to work. But today I woke up and came here to the station so I could be on the air and tell you about, you know, how I do my part. And I am inviting you, no guilt trip, no, I know that you want to do it. The same way I'm not forcing myself to do this. I know this is not going to be too much of a stretch to you to actually pick up the phone this morning and make that donation. 877-500-5266 is the number that you want to call, or you can also donate online, www.kboo.fm. And you know, maybe you're already donating on a monthly basis to KBOO. Well, maybe you want to call us this morning so we can increase your monthly donation by any amount that you want. And you know, when you call this morning, there's a few things that we will give you in return, because you know, there's already all the wonderful programming, from the music to the news to the public affairs to the great shows like Democracy Now! That KBOO is bringing to you. But whenever you call and make this statement by giving us a donation that you care back in return, well, we're going to shower you with even more love by giving you a thank you gift. And this thank you gift could be the book, Subversives, that Paul Rowland has been talking about with the author, Seth Rosenfeld, who is on the phone this morning, calling from San Francisco and talking to us about this book that he has written, talking about really the free speech movement that started in Berkeley in the 60s. And as Paul was reminding us, this is the 50th anniversary of this movement. And why is this even relevant today for the historical piece of it, but also because some of the techniques that has been used from the FBI around surveillance, illegal break-ins, infiltration, planted news stories, even poison pen letters, secret detention lists, all all of these strategies could potentially still be used. And we know, thanks to the account of reporters here on KBOO, thanks to the work of investigative reporters out there in the world, that these techniques are still being used today. So, you know, if you do feel like us, like me, like Paul, like all the volunteers here at KBOO who bring you this kind of programming, that this is the kind of programming that matters to you, then please give us a call, show the support. Grab a pen, paper, this is the number, 877-500-5266. And you could also decide to donate online, kboo.fm. Click on the donate button there. You can get the same thank you gifts that you would do by calling the station. But maybe you are on your way to work and it's very convenient for you to stop by. So 20 Southeast 8th Avenue is where we are at. We're going to go back to Paul and to Seth Rosenfeld. Thank you for calling with your support. Again, 877-500-5266.
And thank you, Del. And we're back. And this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio here on KBOO. And the number to call to get on the air is 503-231-8187. If you have any questions for Seth Rosenfeld, any comments about this book we're talking about, we would like to ultimately get to some of the greater lessons and ramifications for today. Obviously, you know, we're in a surveillance state that is even more pervasive than at that time, but kind of a lot of the climate of surveillance and sort of the overall apparatus or structure were sort of set in place, obviously, before that. But, you know, Hoover really amped it up. And you know, you mentioned, Seth, that a lot of things were set in motion. Obviously, there's a lot that led up to this. It didn't come out of nowhere. But it kind of seemed to a lot of people to emerge, if not out of nowhere, but certainly wasn't expected. I guess in some ways you could say sort of like Occupy kind of rose up seemingly out of nowhere. And there's other parallels with that. Obviously, the surveillance that came out afterwards of Occupy has a lot of parallels. So you know, we're talking about, you know, that conservatives like Reagan, who was in a position to opportunistically play on this episode, the student ferment, and you know, I played that Bob Dylan song very consciously, the paranoid talking John Birch blues, because he's talking about a communist behind every, you know, under every bed or whatever, and you know, but that was really the climate that was being drummed up at the time by politicians like Reagan, by J. Edgar Hoover, more behind the scenes. So maybe talk a little bit, go along more on that tangent about, you know, the connection between Reagan and Hoover and Reagan's rise to power in California.
Well, Reagan first became involved with the FBI in Hollywood during the 40s. At the time, he was an actor and was just getting involved in the Screen Actors Guild, the Actors Union. And as he recalled in his memoir, one night in 1946, there was a knock on his door. He found two FBI agents there who asked if they could speak with him. So he invited them in, and they told him that some of the people who were members of liberal Hollywood groups that Reagan was involved in at that time were actually communists. And not only that, they were saying bad things about Reagan behind his back. As Reagan later wrote in his memoir, I must admit, they opened my eyes to a good many things. And it's from that point on that Reagan becomes, I should say, though, that he says nothing else about this in his memoir. And what we now know from the release of thousands of pages of FBI documents under the Freedom of Information Act, release of documents ordered by federal court, Reagan was much more involved with the FBI than we previously knew. And he became an informer who reported on fellow actors and actresses, sometimes on mere cocktail party chatter. There's one example where Reagan is at a cocktail party and a young actress comes up to him and says, oh, Mr. Reagan, aren't you concerned about the blacklist in Hollywood and how it's ruining so many lives? And Reagan, who is a Screen Actors Guild official, tells the actress, well, there is no blacklist in Hollywood, unless, of course, you mean some studios banding together and deciding not to hire un-American people. The actress engaged him in some more conversation, and then Nancy Reagan all of a sudden came striding across the room and interposed herself between the actress and Reagan and said, how dare you talk to my husband this way? And Reagan walked off. And this is all based on the FBI documents that recount this, and also an interview I did with the actress. Well, what we now know is that the next day Reagan phoned the FBI and reported this actress as potentially a subversive, a dangerous subversive, just based on that cocktail party chatter.
What a fella.
Well, later, J. Edgar Hoover and other FBI officials repaid Reagan for his help in Hollywood by doing personal and political favors for him. And one of the examples is in 1960, the Reagans, Reagan and his former wife, the actress Jane Wyman, had become concerned about their eldest daughter, Maureen Reagan. They had heard that she had moved to Washington, D.C., and was living with an older married police officer. And at the time, she was very young. She was about 18, 19 years old. Well, many parents would have simply picked up the phone and called their daughter and asked what was going on. But the Reagans turned to the FBI, and there's a series of documents that describe their request for the FBI to look into their daughter's romantic relationship. And this request went all the way up to J. Edgar Hoover, who authorized it, even though he acknowledged that it was not a proper FBI activity. Well, as a result of this, several FBI agents investigated the romantic life of Maureen Reagan. One of them posed as an insurance salesman and interviewed her neighbors. Another one interviewed the cleaning lady at her rooming house. And a third one spoke with a source in the Washington Metropolitan Police Department.
Effective use of tax dollars, which continues to this day, of course.
And they confirmed that she was living with an older married policeman and reported this back to the Reagans on the condition that they never reveal the FBI's assistance. Well, it's unclear how this helped their relationship with Maureen Reagan, because as she later wrote in her memoir, she didn't discuss her marriage with this older policeman for decades later.
Listen, Seth, before we go on, we do have a phone caller, so we'd like to get...
Of course.
Sean on the air. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, I had a quick question for your guest. I recently have read two autobiographies, one by the neocon traitor David Horowitz, his book Native Son. The other one was by Bob Avakian, called From Ike to Mao. Both were in the Berkeley area around the same time period. And I understand there was the blacklist, there was COINTELPRO, there was all the repression. But I was wondering if your guest might comment, too, on, you know, here we are, 2014, and what I would consider, from a leftist perspective, just total catastrophe. I mean, economic disaster, foreign policy disaster, environmental disaster. Looking back, the internal contradictions of the left that brought us to where we are now, would your guest be willing to comment at all on, like, the Khrushchev, Stalin, revisionism and all that, and the internal contradictions of the left, and who came out on top, and what led us to this catastrophe today? Thanks.
That's a big question.
Well, my focus is really on, in Subversives, is really on the FBI's activities behind the scenes. And from J. Edgar Hoover's point of view, as we know from these FBI documents, Hoover saw anybody who challenged authority, whether they were a liberal or a radical, or whether they were involved in one political party or another. He saw all these people as potential subversives and opened files on them on that basis, and even compiled lists of people to be arrested in the event of a national emergency without a warrant. And this was a wide range of people, not only political activists, but authors and artists, union officials. And Hoover did this even though he had been ordered to destroy the list by the U.S. Attorney General because it contained unreliable information. So we were talking earlier about how the free speech movement set off these larger reactions amongst conservatives, but also by Hoover's FBI. And I have to say that I was really astonished at the extent to which the FBI investigated the University of California community. There were informants at every level, from students to professors to administrators. There were even informants on the Board of Regents. And the FBI used these informants to gather information, but it also fomented discord within the university administration, and it exacerbated tensions. And beyond just gathering the information, the FBI used this intelligence in an effort to stifle the free speech movement, for example, by leaking negative information to the press that was intended to portray the free speech movement as part of a foreign plot, a communist plot, to disrupt the nation's campuses. The FBI did this even though local agents who had investigated the free speech movement extensively reported to Hoover that it was not a foreign plot, that it was really a student protest against a local campus rule. But Hoover's interest was in discrediting this challenge to authority, even though it was by students and it was against a local rule. Hoover turned his sights not only on students, but also on the University of California president, Clark Kerr. Kerr was a liberal. He was a Democrat. He was also an anti-communist. He was a very influential figure in higher education, really the person who helped put together the what's known as the Master Plan for Higher Education, which is that system of junior colleges, four-year colleges, and graduate schools that was adopted in California and then around the country. Hoover wrote in one memo, "I know Kerr is no good." And he ordered agents to investigate Kerr and then used intelligence to try and get Kerr fired. And this is made very clear in FBI documents. And in ordering the FBI to release these documents under the Freedom of Information Act, the federal courts made a finding that these documents show that the FBI waged a concerted campaign to get Clark Kerr fired as University of California president, not because he was involved in any illegal or improper activity, but because FBI officials disagreed with his policies for the university and his handling of student protests.
Yeah, the whole political use of the FBI and other intelligence gathering is a huge subject that we'd like to get into. We do have another caller, but I'd first like to, I know there's so much written on this that it's like where to start, but to Sean's question, there's I came across on truthout.org an article called "The FBI and the Shattering of Students for a Democratic Society," which is really by Aaron Leonard, very good piece about, you know, as you mentioned, exacerbating tensions within the movement, which speaks to the question. So let's go to our caller before our next break. Ryan, you're on the air.
Hi, I just had a question of whether or not there was a case of someone who had been blacklisted being exonerated or vice versa, someone who had been informing, becoming a radical through their work.
Well, that's an interesting question. It's hard to know whether that's the case. There were many informers, and in the case of these campus informants, they were often volunteers, and they became involved in radical politics at the direction of the FBI with the goal of immersing themselves in student activism and then reporting back to the FBI secretly. And how this affected their lives ultimately is a very good question.
Well, we're going to have to leave it on that note for a second. We're going to have to take a break again for membership encouragement to bring people into the fold of community radio and Wednesday morning talk radio, morning public affairs. Delphine, you're with us, and you want to remind our listeners the number that they can call and other ways that they can support us.
Yes, absolutely, Paul. I would like to share with you this phone number, which is toll-free, 877-500-5266. This is the number that you want to call to tell us why you support KBOO, tell us why you listen, and why you added. Give us a little bit of your money, because every little bit counts towards making this station what it is today. 46 years of brilliant programming, amazing community building, friendships that are born, movements that are born, political and intellectual. KBOO is a hub. You know it. This is why you want to contribute. 877-500-5266 is the number you want to call. You can also go to kboo.fm and donate. Click on the donate button. And it is such an honor and pleasure to be thanking Amy in Portland, who is a new member. I also want to thank James and Rhonda, who both live in Oregon and are renewing. And also big shout out to John in Yakult, who actually have given twice this drive, right? So in the last 9 days, John has called twice to donate. And I know that if John is doing this, is because he is getting so much out of his money. And I know that you would be getting so much out of your investment in this community experiment that has been going on for 46 years and is still going strong. Let's live this beautiful, beautiful resource. Let's make sure it is available for the next generations and those to come. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. I'd like to take a minute to thank all the restaurants that are giving, donating food to feed our volunteers today. Bridges Cafe, 2716 Northeast Martin Luther King Boulevard, open Monday through Friday, 7 to 2, and Saturday and Sunday, 8 to 3. Chaya Thai, 1411 Northeast Broadway, open every day 11 to 9:30 p.m. And Breakside Brewery at 820 Northeast Deckham. You are listening to your favorite community radio station. We're going to go back to this conversation that Paul Rowland is having with Seth Rosenfeld about his book Subversive. The number 877-500-5266.
Thank you, Del, and thank you to all those who've called and those who are going to call, who haven't maybe decided as of yet, but hopefully we'll do so soon. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, we hear author and radio host David Barsamian speaking on current political issues as the keynote speaker at the 2014 Grassroots Radio Conference. At 10, it's Air Cascadia headlines, interviews and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15. On Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, on The Dirt Bag, host Glenn Andreessen and guest Jim Gilbert discuss the upcoming Home Orchard Society All About Fruit show. And you are listening to Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. Coming up on the last 15 minutes here, the number to call if you're able to squeeze in. I know it's a membership drive. It's makes it a little more difficult, but... And this is also a very full discussion. There's a lot of details here. You're probably interested in hearing all you can from Seth Rosenfeld. And as Del mentioned, possibly getting the book for a $60 minimum pledge. So number is 503-231-8187. and we were talking about all kinds of things. But Seth, I wanted to, you know, you've mentioned the Freedom of Information Act a number of times, FOIA, and I know that's a central part of the story, really, at least the background to getting to write this book. It's a very interesting story you have in the appendix to your second edition, the paperback edition. So I'd like for you to just share with our listeners how this whole story kind of fell into your lap, as it were.
Sure. Well, I first became interested in the subject of the FBI's activities at the University of California at Berkeley when I was a journalism student at Berkeley in 1980 and 81. And I knew, of course, that the FBI had been involved in improper surveillance and disruption of political activity elsewhere, because in the 1970s, the Church Committee, named for Senator Frank Church, had held extensive hearings that disclosed this. And I knew also that Berkeley had been an epicenter of protests during the 60s. So I was very curious to know what was the FBI up to behind the scenes at Berkeley. And I submitted a Freedom of Information Act request seeking records on the university and many people who were involved in activities there. And I figured I would get the documents in about a year, write up the story, and go on to the next project.
Ha-ha.
I had no idea I was embarking on what would become a 27-year legal odyssey in which I would bring 5 lawsuits in federal court under the Freedom of Information Act that would lead 7 federal judges to order the FBI to release more than 300,000 pages of documents concerning UC during the Cold War, and also order the FBI to pay my pro bono attorney's fees of more than $1 million. And these documents provide the most comprehensive view of what the FBI was doing at any major university during the Cold War. And they trace the FBI's involvement with 3 major figures who clashed at Berkeley and who each represented very powerful social forces that would have huge impact on the country. Ronald Reagan, of course, who was a rising conservative star and would go on to become president. Clark Kerr, who was a very influential educator and liberal Democrat, and then Mario Savio, who was the most prominent spokesperson for the free speech movement and one of the most influential leaders of the early student movement. And the FBI didn't want to release these records. We had a very lengthy battle in court. The FBI claimed a lot of the information was properly kept secret because it concerned law enforcement or personal privacy or national security. But after examining the documents, the courts concluded that this information, really did not concern law enforcement or national security, but improper surveillance and harassment of people involved in legitimate dissent over government policy. And the courts ordered the FBI to release this information. So there are many parallels to today. We once again find ourselves living in a world where we depend on intelligence agencies to help protect us. And these intelligence agencies need great power and secrecy to do their jobs. But that great power and secrecy is an inherently dangerous combination that poses a potential threat to the democratic process. And it requires constant and rigorous oversight. What we see in my book, Subversives, is how this secrecy and power, when it was unchecked and when there was very little oversight during J. Edgar Hoover's tenure, was misused and damaged many people's lives and damaged many institutions in our society. So really, Subversives in the end is a cautionary tale about the dangers of secrecy and power and the need for increased oversight by Congress and by citizens.
Of course, the broader question of, you know, how much we actually do need these intelligence agencies, and if we do, what kind of agencies we actually need, what kind of powers they should have, are larger questions that we're almost certainly not going to be able to get into this morning. I probably have some views that that differ somewhat or perhaps substantially with yours on that issue. But I think the question, you know, I think one really interesting question is, you know, you mentioned the church commission hearings back in the 70s, which were like maybe the first and last actually real opening up within the established democratic process of, you know, looking at the whole structure and activities of the intelligence services.
Yes,
is it even possible for something like that to happen now or ever again? But we have to leave that question because, as we've said before on the program, this is our membership drive here at KBOO. It's winding down, but it can only wind down fully if you too, who have not contributed, take upon yourself the responsibility of contributing and supporting the ongoing programming here on KBOO Community Radio. Isn't that right, Del?
Yes, it's absolutely right, Paul. And I really want to hear Seth's answer to this question right after I remind you how important it is that you call and support KBOO. So grab a pen and paper, write down this number, 877-500-5266. You could also go to www.kboo.fm and donate securely on our website. You know, I think that the conversation we are having, Paul Rowland is having with Seth Rosenfeld this morning, is really, really exciting and triggering a lot of questions for a lot of folks. And I know lots of the answers are actually in the book, Subversives, the FBI's War on Student Radicals and Reagan's Rise to Power. And you could get this book right now if you call this number I have been sharing with you. And if you make a $60 minimum donation, let me give you this number again, 877-500-5266. And you could get all the answers to your questions by reading the book for yourself. And you know, there's several ways that you could be making this $60 donation. You could give it in full and we'll be very thankful. But really what KBOO is looking for is sustaining funding. And whenever you give smaller amounts on a monthly basis, like I personally do, then that tells KBOO that, you know, we have the stable funding that's coming every month. There is this much money that comes in and that we can use towards our bills. And, you know, I have very exciting news for all of you. There is only 3 days left to this fund drive, and we have a little bit under $30,000 to raise, and we really want to shorten this drive. We want to stop coming to you and asking you for your donation, so the more you all come and call and support, then the earlier we can end this drive. For making your contribution today, the number is 877-500-5266. KBOO is ending the fiscal year this year with some actual funds, and it is the first time in a few years we are in the positive, folks. And the reason why, it's because you have been showing your support to this community hub, this place that's is not only just a place where you get your news, your information, your music, but this is also a place that helps trigger this critical thinking, that make us want to be better to each other, that make us want to build stronger community. KBOO has been a place where movements have started, political and intellectual conversations and movements have started, and it has only been the case because all of us, listeners, members, volunteers, staff, community members in the greater Portland area, and by greater, I mean the world, people are calling us from all over the world, letting us know that this kind of resource is not available in their community. Therefore, they tap into the resource that we have. And this resource is only available because of you. Yes, I'm talking to you, every single one of you. You make this happen. And one of the ways that you make it happen this morning is by giving us a call and pledging your support. 877-500-5266. And for a minimum $60 pledge, you could be getting the book Subversives. And there are only two copies left. So if I were you and I wanted to get all the details of all the story around the dramatic and disturbing FBI surveillance that happened in the 60s and that's still happening today, then I would call right now. But maybe you already have the book and you've already read it and you are more interested in going to see Yasin Bey, a.k.a. Mos Def. And the show is happening in 2 days on the 10th at 8:30 p.m. at the Roseland Theater. Since he's made his video reenacting the force feeding of inmates at Guantanamo Bay, he hasn't been allowed in the United States. It's the first time he is back in his own country of the USA. And Mos Def, Yasin Bey, is going to be in Portland. And here for $60 is your chance to go see him, meet him, and tell him thank you for what you do. And only on KBOO will you get this kind of programming and opportunities. Pick up the phone now. Call us 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
And thank you, Dell. And again, thank you to all who called or are calling now, who will call to help us fulfill the needs of this membership drive, the needs of the station to get our operating funds taken care of. So we are in the last 5 minutes of a Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. My name is Paul Rowland. I'm on the phone from San Francisco with Seth Rosenfeld, the author of Subversives, the FBI's War on Student Radicals and Reagan's Rise to Power. And Seth, you know, it's almost always true on my talk shows that there are quite a few threads that sort of got raised but didn't really get fully followed through with. There are so many on this show. We're only getting able to pick up maybe one or two. I did want to briefly mention a little bit of the publishing history. This is out on Picador Press, published first in hardback in 2012 and last year in paperback. And I take it you had a book tours. How was this received, and generally critically, and on your tours?
Oh, thanks very much. Well, I did speak extensively around the country about it, and I'm glad to say the book had very many positive reviews. The Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the New Yorker mentioned it, San Francisco Chronicle, and Subversives won several literary awards as well. It won something called the Ridenour Book Prize, the Penn Center USA Literary Award for Research Nonfiction, and the Before the Columbus Foundation's American Book Award, as well as some honors from the Society of Professional Journalists. So I was very gratified. I worked on it for quite a while and was glad to have it published so people can know this history and learn from this history, hopefully.
Well, you know, we only have a minute or two left. I would like to possibly have the opportunity to have an interview with you that I could put up on a podcast where we could get into some of these things more in detail. But we can talk about that another time. That might be something in the offing. I did raise the question about what the possibilities were for reining in on these things. And I did mention the state of investigative reporting today, whether it still exists, whether it's still possible in the current news field. Maybe you could take one or both of those questions.
Yes. Well, first, in regard to they're connected, so I think those are very good questions to answer together. There is not as much investigative reporting going on at newspapers as there used to be, especially in the wake of Watergate, which led to the heyday of newspaper investigative journalism. Unfortunately, the internet has disrupted the economic model for newspapers, and investigative reporting is very expensive and time-consuming. So there's been a decline in that. But at the same time, there's been an increase in investigative reporting by nonprofit news organizations, such as the Center for Investigative Reporting in the San Francisco Bay Area, and ProPublica in New York, and many others as well. And the job of the press is to raise questions and bring forth information relevant to people's lives, to shine a light on areas that have been neglected. And that's exactly what the press has done in regards to surveillance, with disclosures about illegal wiretapping of phones, bringing out the allegations and the information from Edward Snowden.
Well, Seth, I hate to do this, but we do have to wrap this up. And we will pursue the possibility of a further interview. I would like to thank you so much. That is what we try to do here on KBOO in our own way, is investigate and bring to light these issues. So thank you so much, Seth, for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. And thank you, listeners. And stay tuned for more programming here on KBOO Community Radio.
I was looking everywhere for them goddamn reds. I got up in the morning and looked under my bed. Looked behind the kitchen and behind the door, looked in the glove compartment of my car, couldn't find any. Looked behind the sink, behind the chair, I was looking for them reds everywhere. I looked way up my chimney hole, looked deep down inside my toilet bowl, I got away. I was sitting home alone and I started to sweat. I figured they was in my TV set.
Good morning. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the League of Women Voters in Portland, helping to make democracy work by reminding first-time Oregon voters that the voter registration deadline is October 14th. Registering to vote by mail or online is easy. Information at lwvpdx.org. That's lwvpdx.org. And the program is Political Perspectives, and we'll get right to that in a moment. Stay tuned at 10 o'clock. It's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news with news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock on The Dirtbag, host Glenn Andreessen and guest Jim Gilbert discuss the upcoming Home Orchard Society All About Fruit Show, which they say is the preeminent fruit tasting